I'm here with Bill Harris. Now, Bill Harris has been in personal development for around 35 years. He's the founder of the Centerpoint Institute, which many of you have heard about. They produce the HoloSync program. Bill also gained a major fame recently, last year, when he was featured in the hit movie The Secret. Now, Bill, delighted to be on the call with you. What I'd love for you to start with, Bill, is can you tell us how you got into personal development? I mean, you've been in this field for 35 years. Would love to hear how you got into it and what you've been doing since we all saw you on The Secret.
Well, actually, I have been involved in some kind of personal development since 1969. So it's been more than 35 years, actually. I became interested in meditation and Eastern philosophy when I was a freshman in college, and I think that's when it all started. So I've have been doing this a long time, and not only have I had a great interest in meditation, but also a great interest in the mind and how it works and how we use the mind to create how we feel in each moment, how we behave, what we attract, what we become attracted to, you know, how people create success or failure, mm-hmm. all those sorts of things. And in terms of what I've been doing since The Secret, well, we have so many things going here at Centerpoint. I don't know if I could list them all, but I guess the newest thing I've been doing is I have been doing workshops with a world famous Zen master, Genpo Roshi. Uh-huh. That's been the newest thing I've been doing. He's an amazing guy. He's a Westerner and has created some combinations of Zen and Western psychology that are just mind-blowing. So I've been, because I'm a big center of influence in the world and in the personal growth world, I've been introducing him to a lot of people. So that's one of the things I've been doing lately.
And tell us a little bit about Centerpoint, because, I mean, that's an amazing story. You started a whole new trend in personal development. From what I understand, your kitchen.
I'd have to say that I was a very screwed up person growing up, emotionally in particular. And I was very angry. I was very difficult to get along with. I had a lot of trouble with relationships, even though I was sort of the golden boy when I was in school. I didn't perform very well in the real world when I got out of school. And I was in my mid-30s when I discovered what led to HoloSync. Mm-hmm. I had always been interested in meditation and had been a meditator, doing traditional meditation. By the 70s, the late 70s, the scientists knew what the electrical brainwave patterns were that meditators were creating mm-hmm. when they were meditating. So there was, they knew what alpha brainwave patterns were and theta brainwave patterns, delta brainwave patterns, and so on. And the people that are listening that are familiar with the Silva method are acquainted with these brainwave patterns, because I know Jose Silva talked about those also. But people were aware of what those brainwave patterns were. I happened to come across a somewhat obscure article in a scientific journal by a researcher at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York that had been written in 1973, which was essentially about how to use certain very sophisticated combinations of sounds when delivered to the brain through headphones, so that you could have certain sounds going to one side of the brain and certain sounds to the other side of the brain, mm-hmm. that you could change electrical brainwave patterns. And so I said, gee, if these are the brainwave patterns of meditation, and this is a way to create certain brainwave patterns in a listener, could we create the brainwave patterns of meditation? also, could you create the brainwave patterns of enhanced creativity or accelerated learning and several other things? But I was most interested in meditation. And so when I and a couple of friends began to play with this, we were blown away, really, by what happened. It was really beyond our wildest dreams. We were experiencing these incredibly deep meditative states. And not only that, as we did this over time, we began to have all these classical meditation experiences that we'd read about but had either never or only briefly had experienced. And then we began to find that all kinds of emotional dysfunctions that we may have had, like anger or fear or depression or anxiety, all kinds of things like that, began to fall away, that something was really changing as a result of exposing ourselves every day to this this technology, this sound technology. Not only did it feel really good, we later found out that it was causing the brain to make all kinds of very pleasurable neurochemicals, which caused us to feel really high while we were doing it, and generally for quite a while after. But it was also creating changes in the brain that were making us more emotionally healthy, that were causing our thinking processes to be clearer, sharper, more clarity, better problem-solving ability, more creative, learning things faster, and all kinds of mental processes were dramatically improved.
Bill, wait, hang on a second.
And we were also...
I'm just curious now. You said you started experimenting with these audios, but where did you get these audios from, and how did you develop them?
Essentially, it's that we knew what the brainwave patterns of meditation are. We know that meditators make a lot of alpha brainwaves, mm-hmm. which are slower than the typical beta brainwaves that most people are walking around making most of the time. Mm-hmm. And that's still slower than that are theta waves, which a very experienced meditator begins to make a few moments of here and there. Mm-hmm. And then even deeper than that were delta brainwaves. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that waking delta is what you make when you're in dreamless sleep usually, but waking delta is very rare, but some, very special, highly evolved people are able to do that. And by the way, experts in these brainwaves tell me that people who can make a lot of waking delta waves tend to have tremendous amounts of personal power. And they tend to be able to create in the world almost anything they decide to create. But at any rate, I knew what the brain frequencies were of each of these brainwave patterns, and I knew from reading this article about from this Dr. Gerald Oster at Mount Sinai Medical Center, I knew how to create these different brainwave patterns using certain combinations of sounds. And so I, actually at the time, I was a graduate student at the University of Portland studying composition with a very famous, internationally famous composer. And I just went into their engineering lab and convinced the department head that he should loan me some equipment from their engineering lab and bought a few other things, actually from a catalog designed for television repairmen, of all things, and I began using these tone generators and some other equipment to record these pure sounds, pure tones, pure sine wave tones, mm-hmm. And combining them in different ways as suggested in this article I had read. And then we just began experimenting with putting that on cassette tape and listening to them on headphones, and through a little bit of intuition and a lot of trial and error, we finally discovered, what we thought was the optimum way to do this. And there were some other discoveries I made later, which maybe we'll get into or maybe we won't. But essentially, we pretty much discovered how to create the electrical brainwave patterns of extremely deep meditation, and that led to all kinds of mental, emotional, cognitive improvements that really blew us away, especially because we'd been doing traditional meditation for a long time, the several of us that were playing around with this. This accelerated that process so much that we just couldn't believe it. One of the reasons why a lot of people don't meditate is because it's hard to do.
Yeah,
it's boring for a lot of people, and it takes quite a while to become good enough at it that you can begin to see some kind of tangible results. Whereas with this technology, you go right to the place where you're meditating like a 25-year expert the first time and every time, so the results begin to happen right away, and they happen in a very accelerated way. And the other thing is that this, when you experience this, it feels so good. I mean, it's amazing in a way. I mean, I know you've used that. You can tell people too. It's really quite amazing that you can sit there and listen to something on a CD for half an hour or an hour, and that it changes your state so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of mind-blowing that can happen. But in addition to changing your momentary, the way you feel now, which it certainly does, it's really the long-term benefits that happen as you do it for weeks and months and even years that are so, really astounding.
Now, Bill, you
people are really transformed.
Bill, you mentioned the different levels of mind: alpha, theta, delta, then deeper delta or waking delta. Does HoloSync, does your technology allow people to slowly move into slower and slower brainwaves until they are able to function at waking delta?
Well, that is one of the things that happens. Actually, it's more that all of these brainwave patterns have benefits,
mm-hmm.
and most people are making mostly beta brainwaves, which in the extreme are what people are making when they're anxious,
mm-hmm.
When they're overwhelmed, when they're stressed, that sort of thing. And then at the slower end of beta is where people become a little more cognitively, have a little more cognitive facility. If you're doing a math problem or doing something that requires a certain amount of focused thinking. And then, we could go into that if you like, but there are certain benefits and certain abilities that are manifested in each of these brainwave patterns. What happens when people, one of the many things that happens when people listen to HoloSync is that they gain the facility to go into any brainwave pattern depending on what it is they intend to do.
I see.
So people tend to be more creative, for instance, in a theta brainwave pattern. So if you're in a situation where you need to be creative and you have been meditating with HoloSync and your brain has gained this sort of plasticity in the sense that you can move between different brainwave patterns, it's not that you sit there and say, okay, I need a theta brainwave pattern. It's just that you're in a situation where you need to be creative and you automatically go into that state in order to do something that requires some creativity. So it gives you a flexibility, and particularly to create the two brainwave patterns that most people have trouble creating a lot of, which is alpha and theta. And then people do, most of the time, the person walking around is creating mostly beta with a little bit of delta. And then, of course, people create delta when they're sleeping, too. But there's a little bit of delta going on in the background all the time because all of your unconscious processes are kind of regulated by delta waves.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is that when you can make waking delta, in other words, make delta without going to sleep, those unconscious processes come more and more under your conscious control,
mm-hmm.
and which is why people that can make a lot of waking delta become very powerful people in their ability to decide on something. You know, this whole process of being intentional or intending something becomes easier and easier when you can make a lot of waking delta.
What I'm trying to understand is how do these levels of brainwave activity relate to the kind of stuff you talk about in the film The Secret? Now, I know you had mentioned to me that you don't believe in everything in that movie, The Secret, but a lot of people right now are tossing out this phrase, law of attraction, and what I'm hoping you can shed some clarity on is how does meditation and the different brainwave frequencies relate to the law of attraction?
Okay, let me just make a comment or two about The Secret first, and
okay.
then I'll go into that, because the problem I have with The Secret,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have probably 750,000 people who are using or have used Holosync
uh-huh.
all over the world in 173 countries. And so I have lots and lots of students.
Mm-hmm.
And I get letters from people all the time saying, I'm using the secret, I'm using the law of attraction,
mm-hmm.
I'm putting it out to the universe that I want this or that or the other thing. And nothing's happening. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that there are a lot of people who developmentally are at a place where they haven't quite figured out some of how the cause and effect works, how things are actually accomplished in the world, how people make outcomes happen in the world. And they're still thinking of things a little bit in terms of magic.
Mm-hmm.
So they think, for instance, that if I quote-unquote put it out to the universe, that somehow it's going to happen just from that. And the truth is that what you focus your attention on is a very important first step. But what that first step actually does is it gives you ideas about how you could accomplish whatever it is you've put out to the universe or whatever you're focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
It alerts you to notice resources that you could use.
Mm-hmm.
It motivates you to act. It also helps you to develop qualities that you might need, such as persistence or courage or enthusiasm or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, however, you have to take action.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people that are having trouble with this are not taking action.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow think it really is magic, that somehow, and there are some things in that secret movie that lead you to believe that. There's something in there about a little boy who wanted a bicycle, and he didn't
right.
do anything to get the
mm-hmm.
bicycle. Well, there are coincidences like that, you see, where you think, I need $800 to pay my rent. I would really be really great if somebody would send me $800, and then Aunt Sally sends them a check for $800.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aunt Sally would have sent them the check anyway. It's a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And you can test that by asking Aunt Sally to send you a check next month, too, and the month after. And you find out that, you know, she's not sending that check the next time, that it was a coincidence. But a lot of people mistakenly think that there's something magic about just the impending.
Mm-hmm.
The impending does those things that I listed a moment ago, then you have to act, and then there's a third part to this too, and that is that the action you take has to be of value in some way. If you want something back from the action, it has to somehow, the action has to somehow be of value. So if you want money, you've got to be somehow creating value for someone that they think is at least as valuable as the money they trade for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if somebody is going to give, well, let's look at it this way. If you give other people money,
mm-hmm.
you go to get food at the grocery store, you give them money. You have electricity, you give the electric company money. You go to get gasoline for your car, you give them money. You always give money because somebody has something else that you want.
Mm-hmm.
The electric company people did not sit around in their boardroom and say, let's intend that Bill Harris will send us money.
Mm-hmm.
They made electricity available to me, and that's why I sent them money. So if people want money, they need to have something that actually is of value to other people. And the other people are the ones that get to decide whether it's valuable and how valuable it is, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the main problem I have, one problem I have with The Secret is that it leads a lot of people who are disposed to hope for some, that there's just some magic way to do this, that all they have to do is think about it and they'll get it. And these people are already struggling to function in the world adequately, and here comes somebody who tells them you don't have to really do anything, all you need to do is wish for it, and the wish fairy will grant your wish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's almost cruel that those people are being told that. The other thing that I think is a problem with The Secret is that it's all about what I can get. It's all about me. It's kind of narcissistic in a way. It's all about how I am going to control the universe. And I find that actually the people that are the most successful are the ones that certainly they might want something.
Mm-hmm.
They might have some desires of their own, but they are really thinking about the world, about other people, about meeting other people's needs, and that sort of thing. It's not all about me. It's all about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so The Secret is, you know, was made by people that are a little more toward that egocentric way of looking at things, and I'm more in favor of a world-centric way of looking at things, and ironically, I do think that people that make more money, if that's what you're out for, are more world-centric. That point of view actually, in terms of the law of attraction, will cause you to attract a lot more.
Bill, just 1 second. I just wanted to segue in here, and I really, really love what you're saying, because I think you've explained it really simply. Now, what you're saying reminds me of a lot of stuff I've read by, say, Jose Silva. In Jose Silva's work, he talks about, he teaches people creative visualization at the alpha and theta level of mind. And one of the things he says is, as you're visualizing the outcome you want to attract into your reality, you must also see yourself taking action, and then when you come out of your alpha level, back into beta, you must immediately take action towards accomplishing what it is that you're seeking. So that's one. So he seems to agree in the action bit. But you also reminded me of something else he says. He says that which you're trying to attract into your reality, it comes to you fastest when you're asking for it not just for your benefit, but for the benefit of two or more people. And especially when you're asking for it in a way where it's going to benefit all of humanity. So I just really like how that correlates. And you're right, this is missing from The Secret. Even Napoleon Hill in his book, The Laws of Success, he says after you've visualized the outcome that you want, go out and take any baby step towards your goal. So it's beautiful. I love how everything is coming together. Now, I wanted to say one thing, Bill. I think you practice what you preach, because in terms of giving back, giving value to the world, I've noticed this one thing about Centerpoint. I had a friend who bought your CD, and he said he was just amazed at the amount of value that you guys delivered. So I think what happened was he bought your CD, and about a week after he purchased the CD, you guys sent him a free gift. It was a bunch of additional CDs for him to share with his friends, and he was just raving about it. He gave me one. And then 1 or 2 weeks later, you sent him a book at no charge. And so, I mean, you created a massive raving fan, and I mean, based on what you just told me, I'm guessing your philosophy is give as much to humanity, give as much to the world, and that's how you attract riches back to you. Am I right?
Well, absolutely. You know, I actually, we started to talk about this and got off track. I actually did start Centerpoint on my kitchen table and wasn't setting out to start a business or anything. I just was very, very passionate about Holosync, and I wanted to tell as many people about it as possible. Kind of like when you see a really great movie and you go around telling everybody, you've got to see this movie. I was not thinking about it like, I want to get rich or something like that. But over the years, I have become very wealthy from this, because it's so many people use this, and it's spread all over the world, and it's become so popular. And quite a few years ago, I got to the point where There's no way that I could ever spend the money that I make. I don't do this at all for money anymore. I give away huge amounts of money to all kinds of charities, mostly that help kids. But I never was doing this for some sort of selfish purpose anyway, but now I don't even have any personal needs that I need to meet other than trying to help as many people as possible. So my whole philosophy is give, and you know, I think that what people get when they get involved with us in terms of all the things that, that we make available to people and all the information and all the everything is hugely worth way more than anything that anybody pays us.
Right.
So, yes, and I do, and you know, I kind of cut my teeth in a lot of ways on Napoleon Hill, and I greatly admire his whole philosophy. And it really is true that the more you give, the more that comes back to you. The irony is that when you get to the point where you're giving to the degree that we are here, you don't care anymore what's coming back to you, but it does keep coming back to you.
Let's get back to this one question, and I'm curious to hear your take on it. I've heard different philosophers explain it. I've heard Esther Hicks' explanation. I've heard Jose Silva's explanation, but I want to know your explanation. How does meditation and the law of attraction work together or work best together?
Well, it's really all about awareness.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening moment to moment in your life or in any person's life, in your experience of life, is created by certain internal processes that are running all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do partly with your beliefs. They have partly to do with what is important to you. They have to do with the internal representations you make, in other words, the internal ways that you think and focus your attention, and a whole bunch more things. I mean, it would take me well over an hour to really just give a thumbnail overview of these internal processes. But there's a whole series of internal processes that we are all doing all the time, and they directly create how you feel in every moment, moment by moment. They directly create your behaviors. They directly create what you attract into your life, the people you get attracted to, the situations you get attracted to, and the ones that you attract and get attracted to. They also determine what different things and experiences and situations in your life mean to you, the meanings you place on them. And so those internal processes essentially create your experience of life. The problem is that those internal processes are operating unconsciously, automatically. They were set up when you were very small, while you were growing up, and some people would even say there are influences that happened before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
But they were set up, and by the time you're an adult, they are operating unconsciously. And it, like software, they're printing out your life. If you can become aware of those processes and observe how they are operating and see exactly how these internal processes are creating all these things that I mentioned a moment ago. I won't go through the list again, but once you see how that works, how you're believing something, for instance, if you can follow the process of you believing something and watch inside to see how that step by step leads to how you feel, how you behave, what you attract, and so on. If those internal processes are creating something that is not resourceful, that does not serve you, you won't be able to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can do dysfunctional things and create outcomes that do not serve you over and over and over for your entire life, and most people do, if you continue to do it unconsciously, on autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
Once you become really aware of how that creative process happens, all of the things that don't serve you fall away. And then it's completely open to you to be intentional about what you do want to create. And interestingly enough, the other thing that happens is that at the same time, this kind of awakens, this awareness kind of awakens a part of you that is not your linear left brain mind that analyzes things in order to decide what to do. It awakens another part of you that is able in every moment to evaluate all the really almost infinite number of variables that are going on in your life in that moment and decide which ones to pay attention to, exactly what you need to do next, and to figure out how to do it. And this just happens automatically and spontaneously. Mm-hmm. And so when you tap into that, almost anything you do works. Mm-hmm. And so meditation is one powerful way to develop that awareness, the ability to be what some people would call be the witness, or to witness your internal processes. There's more things that you could witness besides your internal process. You could also witness your behavior. You could witness things that are going on externally. You could witness things about your body and so on. But for right now, I'm just talking about witnessing these internal processes that create your experience of life. Meditation begins to give you the awareness to notice that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's something else you can do also, though, that accelerates the process even more. Because if a person not only has this awareness, but they also have some idea of what they're going to become aware of, mm-hmm. they sort it all out much more quickly. It would be sort of like if you went to Chicago, but you'd never been to Chicago before, and before you went, someone who was really new Chicago sat down with you and told you all about Chicago, showed you aerial photos, showed you pictures of the major intersections, showed you, all the ways to get around in the city, and, told you as much as they could about Chicago, so that when you got there, when you got to a certain place, you said, oh, I recognize this place, I know where we are, there's a restaurant over there, and this building is over here, and if we turn left here, that's the way to get to this other place. And so the two things that I do is I give people this tool, Holosync, which not only creates the kind of awareness that meditation creates, but does it in a hugely accelerated way. But then I also teach people about these internal processes I was talking about, and show them how to go in and observe every one of them so they can see exactly how it's working, how it's creating their life, and how to become aware of the other choices for how they could do it instead of doing it automatically. Then you have the awareness, you have a knowledge of what you're going to become aware of, and even the process of going in and looking at this stuff creates additional awareness. Using Holosync makes that process faster too. Then people actually pretty quickly can, I'm not saying that this is effortless to do this. There's a little bit of work involved to do this. It can be really fun work to do it because you're discovering some amazing things about the mind and about how your mind creates your reality, and you're gaining this facility over your life that is quite amazing. But once you go through this process, you really do become a master of your life and a master of creating anything you want to intentionally. And then another interesting thing happens also, because what you thought was reality, because you had been unconsciously creating it previously, now you realize that what you thought was reality was only one choice of an infinite number of possible realities that you could create. And then you begin to say, well, gee, if this isn't reality and I'm creating this, what is reality? What is there a capital R reality that underlies all of this? And that's when people begin to become interested in things like enlightenment and so on, because there's something underlying all of this stuff that your mind can create that's even more fundamental to it. And then I start to teach people, how do you get in touch with that? How do you experience that? And Holosync also helps you to do that, too. And that opens up a whole additional dimension to people, a whole spiritual dimension. And then the last thing that I teach people is, okay, now you know how to control your mind and how to create your life intentionally. You also are more in touch with who you really are, this spiritual dimension. How then do you go back into the world and from that perspective operate in the world? And the people that do that end up becoming world leaders in some way, whether they become famous or not. They are people that are doing things that are having a profound effect on the world and on other people. And they're helping people to wake up. They're helping people to get out of suffering that they're unconsciously creating. And in some ways, they end up being real catalysts for the evolution of the world.
I see.
So, that's sort of the short version of what I do.
Okay, so let me see if I get this right. What you're saying, Bill, is that our inner beliefs, the beliefs that we may have been raised with, our inner beliefs shape our outer reality. By meditation, we are able to gain inspiration or ideas that help us shake away the beliefs or help us get intuitive ideas for new beliefs. These new beliefs, or the shedding of the old beliefs, then, by changing our core, allow us to create a better reality into our world.
I think that what you're saying is true. I think there's more to it than that. I think that it's really that, it's more than just beliefs, although beliefs are a big part of it. It's really the fact that beliefs and a number of other related things right now are, people take them for granted. They are operating to create your life out of your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
As you can become aware of all this and observe the process of how this creation happens, you gain the ability to be in charge of it. This is more than just knowing what you believe, for instance. Mm-hmm. Most people that are interested in personal growth could write a book about their stuff,
mm-hmm.
about their all the personal growth stuff they know. But still, their life is, to one degree or another, not working that well.
Mm-hmm.
There's some areas of life that may be working, others that aren't working so well. Knowing about something that you do is not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a first step. I'm not talking about knowing that you sabotage yourself in a certain way, for instance. I'm talking about seeing internally exactly how you sabotage yourself. What internal representations do you make? What internal pictures are you making? What internal thoughts are you having? What are you focusing on, and in what order? And there's a certain internal process that you're going through in order to create some outcome that you don't want. And you might know that you do this. You might have seen yourself screw up one relationship after another, for instance. But there's something you're doing inside that's out of your awareness that it's coming from you, but it's not something you're doing intentionally. Once you can see yourself do it, which means tuning in with awareness to internal processes that up to now have been unconscious, mm-hmm. and seeing how you're doing it, then the parts that don't work fall away. Now, Jose Silva, for instance, in the things that he teaches, is coming at this same thing from a slightly different perspective, in a sense. He's just saying, okay, if you go in and visualize yourself accomplishing something,
mm-hmm.
what you're doing is you are taking control of a certain part of those internal processes,
mm-hmm.
and you're consciously taking control of it. And that works very well. It works even better if, in addition to doing that, you're going in and seeing what you're doing already
mm-hmm.
and observing it, because then it falls away if it's not working. He's sort of doing step two, and there's a step one that if you do that makes step two work way better.
And
actually, his stuff works great. Jose Silva is a great pioneer in controlling the mind and how it creates reality, and I have the utmost respect for him. And I think there are some additional things that you can do. Today we know a lot more about cognitive psychology and how the mind creates our moment-to-moment reality, some things that Jose Silva did not know about. He certainly created a way to utilize a huge amount of what was known when he was creating his method, though, which I admire greatly.
So it's that step one, Bill, which I'm trying to gain a bit more clarity on, and I bet a lot of people quite a number of people listening in are also trying to understand. Could you tell us a little bit about how HoloSync, and I know you also have a program called the Life Principles Integration Process, and again, I'm not asking for a sales pitch or anything, but what I'd like to understand is how do these things help us gain clarity, the step one of the process, or so as you call it?
Well, as I said, this is all about awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turns out that when you go into, let's say, we'll start with a beta brainwave pattern.
Okay.
When you're in a beta brainwave pattern, which is the normal waking consciousness, one of the hemispheres of your brain is dominant over the other, which is called brain lateralization. You could be left brain dominant, or you could be right brain dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, the brain is not balanced. One of the effects of this, by the way, is that we tend to look at the world in terms of separate events, separate things, and we feel relatively separate from the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we can feel anxious or fearful or angry, and in the extremes of beta, those are some of the symptoms of being in the extremes of beta, and also of feeling separate. As you go into an alpha brainwave pattern, the two sides of the brain begin to balance a little bit more. The brain works better. You're moving toward what they call whole brain functioning, which is kind of like thinking in stereo.
Mm-hmm.
And you also begin to see more how things go together. You begin to feel less stressed, less afraid, less anxious, and so on. When you go into theta, the brain balances or synchronizes even more. And when you go into delta, it has the maximum amount of synchronization. The more that your brain synchronizes, the more that the two hemispheres are balanced, the more awareness you have.
Mm-hmm.
Except that as you go into delta, it's almost like the amount of awareness is too much to handle for most people, and they go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's very renewing and invigorating to go into delta, which is why people feel great after a good night of sleep. If you can gain the ability to stay alert during delta, then not only do you have that renewal, that reinvigoration, but you also have that clarity that comes from being in that state. So, at any rate, as you go from beta to alpha to theta to delta, the amount of awareness increases,
mm-hmm.
and the ability to observe things that were, another way to say this, I guess, would be that your access to that which was unconscious,
mm-hmm.
that which you were unaware of, internal processes of which you were not aware of, becomes greater. And as you do that, you gain control over those things, or you could
mm-hmm.
say that what doesn't work falls away. You can't run on autopilot and be aware. So as soon as you begin to become aware, everything changes.
Got it. But how does that?
It's one of those things you have to experience to appreciate.
Bill, here's my question. How does that awareness come? Does it come through dreams? Does it come through inspiration? Through thoughts that enter your head after you come out of your meditation level? What I'm trying to understand is, how does that awareness actually come to a person?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know if anyone has ever asked me that exact question. That's kind of like saying, you're telling me what it's like to eat a strawberry, and I've never had a strawberry, and you're trying to describe what it's like to become aware of how it tastes, and trying to describe that to me.
Mm-hmm. I see where you go.
I think that, you know, let me see if I can take a shot at this. I mean, some of it does come, yeah, I guess it's just that you begin to notice things, and you have aha experience. I mean, everybody's had these aha mm-hmm. moments where they go, oh, I get it. It's mm-hmm. sort of like when you suddenly learn something. In one moment, you don't get it, and then suddenly you do get it. Mm-hmm. You know, you were learning how to do long division when you were in the fourth grade or something, and it didn't make sense, and then all of a sudden you figured it out, and you went, oh, okay, I get it. I get how to do this. It's that sort of thing. It's kind of like you would say, I'm having so much trouble getting along with all these people at work. I'm having trouble getting along with my boss.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you go, oh, you suddenly see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Before you were thinking, he's an asshole, he's a jerk, he's doing this, he's learning, he doesn't get it, he doesn't understand me, he doesn't care about mine. And then suddenly you get, oh, wait a minute, I see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's contributing to this, and suddenly then you have some control over it. But until that moment, that aha moment, you didn't get it. I mean, so that would be one example of it.
Now
here's another way to mm-hmm. come out of it. You know, when you were a baby, you did not say, I think I'll raise my right arm so that I can grab this thing off the table that I see.
Mm-hmm.
It was all done very unconsciously. But at a certain age, you began to be aware of the fact that you could move your arms and legs in certain ways intentionally and accomplish things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so that's the same kind of thing as where an awareness of how to move your body. At one moment, you didn't have it. At a certain age, you suddenly began to have that awareness. And in the same way, at a certain time in your development, you are totally caught in your emotions. And then at a certain age, you begin to say, I'm angry. You're noticing that you're angry instead of being so engulfed in it that you don't have any perspective on it. So we're already developmentally going through a process of becoming aware of our body, and then our body movements, and then the sensations in our body, and then we become aware of our thoughts, and then we become aware of more abstract mm-hmm. ideas that we have, and so on and so forth. But at a certain point, most people stop this progression of becoming more aware. Meditation, and in particular HoloSync, is a way to continue that process, so that you become increasingly aware of more and more things that previously were unconscious. See, at one point, just the way you move your body was unconscious. And even after you became aware of that, your emotions were unconscious, and then your thoughts were still unconscious. This just takes that developmental process further and further and further. You know, they often say, and I don't think this is technically correct, but they say that people are using 10% of their brain or something like that. That really isn't true, but people are certainly not aware of a whole lot of what their brain is doing and what their mind is doing. But you can become aware of much, much, much more of what you're doing to create your life and your reality. And this type of approach that I've been describing is something that allows you to do that. And those few people that you hear about in history that really do amazing things, like a Buckminster Fuller would be a good example of a really amazing genius who was able to create things mentally that other people could only imagine. Or Nikola Tesla, who developed alternating current, he used to create entire machines in his mind, set them working, and then go back every few days and check to see how they were running. And if they weren't running properly, he would make little changes until he had the machine running the way he wanted to, and then he would make it. Now, those are sort of worldly ways to use this. This same sort of thing applies not just to going out and creating something in the world. It also applies to your emotional life, your spiritual life, and a lot of other things. But, I mean, those are just some examples in the world of creativity. As you become more aware of these internal processes, you become the master of them. And not only does it help you to be more creative, more intelligent, learn more, all those sorts of things, but it also allows you to be kinder, more compassionate, more empathetic, more loving, and, you know, all kinds of things in the emotional realm. And we could actually look in a whole lot of different realms. You know, there are all these different types of intelligence, all these different types of intelligences, not just cognitive intelligence, that they've identified. And every one of these is increased by developing this kind of awareness.
I want to put it in a practical sense. I had a question from someone on the list, and this reminds me of something you said about 30 minutes ago. You said a lot of people, after watching a movie like The Secret, they feel that just by adjusting their thought, thinking positive, they're going to change their reality. So I had a question from someone on the list, and she said, listen, I've been lonely and miserable and trying to meet the right guy for years and years and years, but every time a guy comes into my life, something happens and the relationship goes sour really fast. And as a result, I'm 38 years old right now, and I've still to meet Mr. Right, and I'm beginning to feel that I may never meet Mr. Right. I've watched The Secret, I'm meditating, I'm visualizing this Mr. Right coming into my life. Why is nothing happening? Why is nothing changing? So, Bill, what advice would you give someone like this?
That's a great example. That's a perfect example to describe how this works. Again, as I said earlier, your internal processes are creating your life. So this woman, her internal processes are creating her life, including the men she gets attracted to and the men she attracts. And one aspect of those internal processes is what she believes. People tend to prove that whatever they believe is true. Most people think that they believe something because it's true. They have evidence for it. In actual fact, anything you believe strongly enough, you will gather evidence that will either make it be true or make it seem to be true, which is really amounts to the same thing in terms of your experience of life. So if, for instance, she believes no man will ever really want me, or relationships are incredibly hard and they hardly ever work, or I don't deserve to have someone to love me, or I'm unlovable, or, I mean, there's a whole bunch of beliefs that could lead to the kind of results you described. Now, what I would tell someone like this to do is to figure out what it is they really believe about men, about relationships, about themselves, and then I would show them how to go inside and watch themselves believe that and see exactly how that belief turns into the feelings that she's creating, the actions she's creating, and one in whom she's attracting or is attracted to. And she will find, if she does that, that there is a direct connection. There's more to it than just what she believes, but that's a major part of it. That she is figuring out unconsciously ways to prove that she's right about what she believes, and she's recruiting men to help her be right about it. Now, she can only do that as long as she does that process unconsciously. as soon as she does it with awareness, and I don't mean know that she does it. She probably already knows that she does it. She told you that she was doing it. What I mean is watch the internal processes and how they step by step lead to this. Now, this happens to be almost exactly something that was happening to me. I was doing something very similar with women. My mother told me while I was an adolescent over and over and over and over, you're just like your father, no woman will ever be able to put up with you, and so on and so forth. And I really, at an age where I was becoming interested in women and everything, I really internalized this, and I acted it out over and over and over again. I would attract women that could not be intimate, who had been abused, who did not trust men and therefore would not trust me, and then I would try to figure out a way to get them to trust me, and in a various ways that I would make my belief about all of this come true. When I finally figured out what I was doing, I began to observe myself doing it. I could get attracted to a woman in a huge room full of people. Across a crowded room, I would see someone and say, wow, she's cute. I'm going to figure out a way to meet her. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I could tell you the life story and all kinds of things about that person just because I was attracted to them across the room.
Wow.
Because I would have radar for the exact woman that would help me to act out what I and prove what I believed. So once I figured out that I was doing this, the next time I began to be attracted to somebody, I said to myself, okay, I know now where this is going. I know how it's going to unfold. And I just, as I was starting to date this person and getting involved, I began to watch. I was watching, you know, what my thoughts were, what internal pictures I was making, what I believed, what my internal dialogue was, and all kinds of other things that I was doing, and watching my response, different things she did, and so on and so forth. And watching the same thing that always happened begin to unfold, except this time I was watching it unfold with awareness. I was consciously seeing the process unfold. And since where it was going was obvious, and where it was going was not anywhere I wanted to go, I could not keep doing it. And at a certain point, what happened was I just lost interest, whereas before my attraction would stay really strong even though the thing was heading toward misery. This time, I just couldn't maintain going there. It's sort of like if you were unconsciously pounding your hand with a hammer, you could probably keep doing it. But once you say, God, I'm sitting here pounding my hand with a hammer, what the hell am I doing? You just can't keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lost interest in this woman, and I lost, and for some reason, I lost interest in doing that with anybody. And what happened after that is I began to attract a whole different kind of women that were invisible to me before, or if I saw them, didn't interest me, but now they did, and I began to attract women that already trusted me and already liked me and were kind and could be intimate. And it really changed my entire life from this big roller coaster of drama with women to one where I, found somebody that really loved me and was a lovely person to be with, and now I have a wonderful relationship. But this could apply to anything that somebody believed or was creating in their life. When you find out what is generating it, really generating it, and observe yourself create it, you can't even get to the finish line if it doesn't serve you.
Right.
So hopefully that example clarifies this a little more.
No, that's great, and I really appreciate you sharing something so personal.
You bet. My life is an open book.
Right. We have about 5 minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like to say? But just before you go there, Bill, I just want to tell the audience about your blog. Bill has an excellent blog. You can access it on centerpoint.com. That's C-E-N terpoint.com/blog. And I just want to read one comment, and this is a genuine comment that someone left on one of his posts. It said, "Your words are like raindrops on a parched desert flower." Thank you, Bill. So definitely read Bill's blog. It's extremely enlightening. And Bill, anything else you would like to add?
Well, and certainly if people want more information about Centerpoint or Holosync, or even if they want, you know, we'll send them a free demo CD so they can experience it for themselves. They can just go to centerpoint.com and then /blog for the blog. I guess that, you know, I've already really said it. Mastery of life is really about awareness. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate enough these days that what used to be esoteric, all the things that are available to really become super aware, used to be esoteric. They used to be handed down one-on-one. Now there are few things that are esoteric anymore. And so we're in the middle of a real explosion in the world of people that really understand this, and hopefully I'm one of them, helping lots of people to attain something that hitherto was available only to a select few people. If a person is interested in this sort of thing and they're willing to pay the price, which is actually a delight to pay, not a drudgery or anything, not only can people transform their own lives, but in doing that, they're transforming the world. And Lord knows it needs transforming. So I really hope people will become involved with some of the stuff we're doing at Centerpoint. We're not the only people that are on the leading edge of helping people do this, but I think we're one of the people on the leading edge, and I hope to, you know, be able to interact with a lot of the people that are listening to this, and I really appreciate that you are making, you know, this information available to another audience of people that may not be aware of the, you know, all these tools that they could use. So I appreciate it.